saving money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Ha! Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go, got to catch my shirt. My plantation shoe, my plantation shoe, my plantation shoe. Ah, plantain, plantain, plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the soccer edition. This is your host, Mitch. I'm here as always with Mateus. Hey, Mateus, how's it going?
I'm going well, Mitch, you know, smiling through it all.
Smiling through it all. Another bad day haver for the second straight week. This is
hair,
a problem
hair.
For our
just Mateus. Just the hair.
With us as well, of course, is Emily. Hi, Emily, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm still getting used to this being a visual medium. So I'm like, I'm a smile while you're talking. And I did, you know, manage to wash my hair this time. So I'm feeling good about that now that I know this is broadcast to the masses.
Yeah, you were prepped this time. That's what's important. You're ready for Instagram Reels. It's great. Dean said in the chat that you need dreadlocks. I'm assuming that's about Mateus.
Oh, hell no, bro.
I don't think it's about me.
White dreads is crazy, Dean. That's wild disrespectful. I'm going to be smelling like that. And fuck.
All right. Let's get into, before we get into the games, NWSL had a little bit of a dramatic trade deadline. We talked a bit about it last week when we were talking shit about the Houston Dash, but Ashley Sanchez got her move. Wrong Sanchez. I was worried that I did that last week and like paused myself. And then this week I just fully confidently said the wrong name. So good stuff from me. Maria Sanchez is now a San Diego Wave player. Which is quite the ad. Emily, what do we think?
An outcome that I disliked, though I'm glad that she's out of Houston. Obviously, that was a bad situation for her. It was crazy that she had to release like her own letter as well, like on top of it being linked to media. She said, release me, please. I want out. San Diego definitely needs her because if you watch like their last few games, it's been super stagnant attacking wise. So it's a good fit for them. I'm unhappy.
Yeah. And there's some other trades that went down this week. What are a few that caught your eye?
I'm sorry, guys. It looks like I'm crying, but my eyes are just burning. So anyone who's like watching me like wipe my eyes, this is crazy.
See, I just started crying talking about Maria Sanchez. I was like so confused. I'm like, the show must go on. I'm not gonna bring it up. We're just gonna keep it rolling.
I'm like, I need to get through it. I'm so emotional. Apologies. My God. We're starting out great. Yeah, there were some other trades. Portland got a keeper from the Dash. They definitely needed it. And Angel City, this was kind of the other big stuff. They traded Paige Nielsen, who's been a starting center back for them, to the Dash, who definitely need defensive cover. Pretty surprising. But also, they traded away Amandine Henry, very decorated French international, you know, Champions League winner several times over. They only signed her last year. And this is the kind of trade that I hate because of what, like, it kind of signals to other internationals who might be looking to come to the league. Now it kind of looks like she's on board, maybe. She probably wasn't playing to her standard in LA, but I hate the optics. Would she have left Leon to sign for Utah directly? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, Utah definitely need her. But I thought that one was kind of crazy. And it kind of also speaks to Angel City's, like, squad building. And that, like, they don't really have a long-term vision, maybe. And if they do, it's like they don't have faith in it. They did need to clear some space for Kristen Prowse. But I feel like they're maybe going to do a little bit more than that because I think they need to clear some cap space, too.
Yeah, I think that kind of trade speaks to a wider thing about just like how MLS and NWSL operate, where there's this identity crisis between being an American sports league and being a soccer league. This is not a thing anywhere else in the world where you can sign a contract with a team, plan to play in Miami, and then all of a sudden you're getting traded to Toronto. Like, that is not a thing anywhere else in the world. And I imagine that scares a lot of players. Oftentimes when you're, especially more on the MLS side, where if you're signing as a DP, you're harder to move. So, like, the chances that you get traded or something like that are obviously a lot lower. But it's still something that I think is ultimately going to hold the MLS back, hold MLS and NWSL back on a wider stage just because of this, like, wanting to be like other American sports when they really don't need to be. There's a lot of mobility and interesting mobility in soccer on its own. And I think taking rights away from players is not making your league more desirable to join, which ultimately needs to be the goal of it if you want to become a top league.
Yeah. I'm kind of shocked she didn't have a no trade clause in her contract just because of like her stature. I know that when Kelly O'Hara signed for the Gotham, like, she had a no trade clause in her contract, and it seems like Angel City, the way that they marketed themselves as being like player first, that they would be amenable to that. I don't know. Maybe she was happy to go to Utah. But yeah, speaking of Gotham, they also, this was puzzling to me. They made a transfer. They paid Chelsea some money for their former number one goalkeeper and Katrine Berger. She's still quality. She's been benched. I'm confused a little bit. I think this signals that Abby Smith is not expected back anytime soon. And I know that Juan Carlos Amoros likes to have like two starting caliber players. Cassie Miller maybe isn't that great playing out of the back. But then you watch us like attack, and it's clear that maybe we need to sign a forward instead. So that's a little puzzling to me, scratching my head about it. Maybe they have plans to do so, but I think they'd have to wait till June probably for like an international player. So,
I mean, with the way you guys have been operating over there in New Jersey, New York, it sounds like you'll find a way. I mean, this offseason was so good. Like, you got to have faith in them to find something to, you know, or at least in the squad building in general, I would say.
Yeah, I haven't hit the panic button yet. We can talk about that very shortly.
I mean, this is a great segue into Gotham nil, Spirit 2. Your Gotham FC fell at home. Not a great performance.
It was away. It was away.
Okay, sorry. I wrote down.
How do you feel? Difficult to play there, I think.
But not a this felt like it could have been a worse scoreline than it was.
I was just like sitting there with like my hands on my face. Because if Rodman had been like clinical, and if Cassie Miller also, to be fair, hadn't been like on her game, it could have been, you know, another scoreline like that we've seen elsewhere this weekend. But yeah, we were pretty lucky not to. You'd probably be five down. I mean, the Spirit looked like so dynamic and fluid. And we look basically the opposite. Like, we make it look really difficult to score. While everyone else in the league is kind of making it look easy. Very Reese Witherspoon and they live on, like, what? Like, it's hard, you know, to get into Harvard Law. I mean, the way that Juan Carlos likes to play, it is more difficult to score. Like, we're not being super direct. But we're also, like, when we're getting good positions, we're not shooting the ball. We're not really giving ourselves an opportunity. It was said this weekend that Gotham are ranked, like, bottom two of shots taken so far, when last year we were in the top three. Like, Delaney Sheehan, probably two occasions, she was in the box, could have taken a shot, and was looking for a pass. And you just, like, need to take the opportunities when they come. It doesn't help that Lynn was only fit for 45 minutes, and she's still probably finding her form after her injury. But, boy, I talked about it last week, but the Spirit are good. Corey Bethune, like, stepped into the league ready to go.
Sorry, real quick, Mateus. One interesting thing I noticed about, you mentioned Trinity Rodman missing a couple chances, and this is the second week in a row now where I felt like she's, like, created a lot of chances for herself and not been able to score. She was playing more from the left from what I saw in this game. And I was confused by that because usually I'm seeing these chances come from the right. Do you know why that she was had the wing switched on her?
I think it's one because they've been playing Ashley Sanchez out. Not Ashley Sanchez. Oof, another Sanchez. With Ashley Hatch out wide and Star through the middle. So I think maybe they needed to do that for Ashley Hatch's sake. Because I think Trinity definitely can play both wings.
She had a good game. Like, yeah. She created good chances for herself, just didn't score. Mateus, what were you going to say? Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I was just going to talk about Corey Bethune. Like, she wasn't the first overall pick. Was it expected for her to blow up this quickly? Like,
I saw a lot of talk about her. I don't watch a lot of college soccer because, you know, you have to have a life. You can't just watch soccer all the time. You can watch everything. Yeah, what I heard is that she was really good. I think she's only like 19 or 20. And honestly, like, I wouldn't be surprised if like Emma Hayes called her up for the next camp. Like, maybe it's too soon, but when someone's hot, it's like let them cook. Yeah, another note, Tara Davidson pulled up with a hamstring, and I think that just is like a sign that the soccer gods won't let you flourish if you've signed too many good players in one offseason.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anything I've learned from, this is now the second year that I've closely followed this league, the team that won the offseason last year were pretty fucking shit, so.
I don't think we're shit. Like, we definitely have a lot of problems, but if you look at who we've played and who we've not beat, lost to, or drawn, it's Kansas City, it's the Courage, it's the Spirit. So yeah. It's hard to work through that stuff when you're playing your toughest matchups. So.
All right. So I think that wraps up our closest game in NWSL that we're talking about this week, because the other three are weird blowouts. I feel like we've had a lot of these in NWSL this year where it's a very close game and then all of a sudden just a landslide of goals. And Utah-Louisville is a prime example of this. Because it was 1-1 at the half, or like right before halftime, and then Louisville won 5-1. Emily, what happened to Utah to just implode late in the second half?
I mean, to be fair, I think Racing were like super dominant from the start. They had a bunch of chances where, you know, like one of those flurries in front of net where it just like doesn't go in. Where maybe another day it would have. So I think it could have been something like 3-1 at the half. But they just had some favor on their side, which blew away in the second half. I just think they're inexperienced. And that's why I think getting Amandi Henri is really important, because they don't really have, like, a huge veteran presence in the team. Like, Paige Monahan, the captain, she's, like, veteran-ish, but she's not, like... Like, that's why I thought they were going to sign Allie Long. She did a trial with them, which I'm like, making Allie Long do a trial, I thought was like kind of crazy. Like, just sign her. She's a free agent. Like, it's not going to cost you a lot. So that was really puzzling to me. But obviously now they brought in Henri. Maybe that's why they didn't sign Allie Long. So I think that's really going to help. But they were basically so easy to play through. Savannah DeMello, Brace. Like, it also reminded me, I was like, she was called up to the World Cup, started the first game, and then was like, never to be heard from again.
I wanted to talk about Savannah DeMello because she's someone that's really interesting to me because of that fact. Every single time she saw the field in the World Cup, I was really impressed with her. I thought she played pretty well. And in terms of national team conversation, and again, she plays in a very tough position. Like Rose Lavelle, Lindsey Horan, and now Jaden Shaw is like fully in the 10 mix as well. Like it's a tough position to break into. So like there's a lot of clear context with this, and like her starting in the World Cup was part of like Rose was injured, stuff like that. But she really impressed me in the World Cup. And so it's wild to see someone like almost fully fall out of like the national team conversation without like fully like breaking down. Like it's not like she's like just completely gone to shit as a player or anything like that. But it's like such a logjam position where it's just like, oh yeah, Savannah DeMello started a World Cup game and now she's probably not even like in the, like even if the Olympics rosters weren't comically small, she probably still doesn't make like a normal size roster for the Olympics, which is crazy.
Yeah, I think she just suffers from like that position being deep, even though we're still suffering like, or like trying to find the right combination of players there. I think that's also probably what hindered her. But like, yeah, the rise of Jaden Shaw for sure is. And then Kat Macario coming back, she can play like that false nine position. Yeah, that's really tough on her because she is a great player. And she's still young, like hopefully, I don't know. I think it's going to be this thing where maybe people like come back and like drop off now that like we have such a deep pool. It's really crazy. But the fact that we have all these like kids coming through and they're ready to play, like that's tough.
It's a good problem to have in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mateus, do you have anything on that?
No, I mean, we don't have to talk about this in extent because I don't want to be a hater too much, but like, Rose Lavelle hasn't shown a lot for club or country in a long time, and I get that she's been hurt, you know, previously, and I think was hurt this week still. Is she hurt long term now? I don't know.
Rose, they don't like updating injuries status.
It's overrated.
It's always a mystery. But yeah, I mean, I think the NWSL championship was like the best of Rose Lavelle that we had seen in a while. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we get that back, but I don't know.
I think that Mateus does raise an interesting question in terms of Rose Lavelle, because the Olympic rosters are so small. I think it's like 18 players, right? Something like that, to have on the entire roster for this tournament. I don't know if you can afford at this moment to pick a player like Rose Lavelle, even despite all of the great that she has done for the national team, and I don't want to understate that at all because she is a fucking fantastic player, she's not reliable enough right now to warrant being picked for an 18-player tournament in a position pool that she's in, that there's so many like options that are healthy and firing and playing well. Like, right now, Jaden Shaw and Kat Macario probably are definitely better options as attacking midfielders right now than Rose Lavelle is. And you can only afford to take like a couple. So is there a conversation that Rose Lavelle, like, if she, like, could be healthy and miss out on the Olympics?
I think she's going to go if she's healthy. I think that's just the way U.S. soccer is. She's been at all of like the press events that they've been having for like Team USA. So I think that's a strong signal.
Well, she's busy. I mean, she's free. She doesn't have practice.
She is in New York. I mean, Crystal Dunn and Emily Sonnet were accompanying her. But I think she's there if she's healthy, whether that's the right choice or not. But yeah, I think in the recent national team games when I was watching, I was thinking, like, I don't think she'll be a starter, though.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, and Emma, who knows what she's going to do? Like, that's the wild card, so.
Yeah, I mean, we've also tried to like shoehorn her into the lineup, have her on the wing and stuff. I don't know. It's been interesting, and I think that'll be an interesting development as we go closer to the Olympics. Let's move on to the next game now. Emily, your little tag under your name on the YouTube thing is Vladko must be stopped. And Vladko Ivanovsky's Kansas City Current beat Bay FC 5-2 this weekend. He apparently Vladko's a fucking menace now. So what's going on?
My question is, why must he prosper when he caused such suffering? This isn't fair or just. He can't keep getting away with this, as the meme would be. Yeah, they're like a fucking attacking machine. Like, it's inevitable. Right now, I'm like, they're going to win everything. Like, they can't be stopped. 17 goals scored in 5 matches. That's pretty nuts. Bia and Chewinga, like, they just fit perfectly together. Like, and it took them basically no time to, forge this partnership. They both had a brace in this game. Like, one of them's going to be the MVP, probably Chewinga. But right now I'm just like, what can you do? How can you stop them? I mean, Gotham was the only team that they didn't beat and to hold them to only one goal. So, hey, there's the trophy right there, right?
When you are a fan of a team that hasn't won many games this year, you're going to grab it whatever you can. So I get that. As someone who was a fan of a bad American soccer team last year, I get it. I understand the position that you're in now. I understand.
He says last year.
Within the last year. let's move on now to...
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Do you have anything else on Kansas City Bay?
I'm only going to say that, like, this is another bummer note. Alex Ware, who scored that amazing goal last week, tore her ACL in this game. So, fucking sucks. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to the last game that we're covering in NWSL this weekend, which is Portland 4, Houston 1. Portland are back. Let's go. They're fully back. They probably shouldn't have won this by this margin. Like, if Houston were a competent team, they would have tied this at 2-2. Instead, they missed a really, really good chance, and then it was 4-1 Portland all of a sudden. What happened, Emily?
Yeah, that was exactly what I was thinking. I was like, from the get, I kind of had the thought before the game, I was like, I could easily see Portland thrashing them. Just like, it was a prime moment for a thrashing, just with everything that happened going into the game, you know. Both teams, like, really needing a win. But, yeah, like, they didn't close the door on Houston, and then, like, one more goal goes in, and Houston's heads, they just, like, drop. Like, you can see that they are struggling for, like, togetherness there. I think that's, like, a big problem. And they just, like, kind of give up when things are down. So I don't think they really have it in them to fight back in a game like this.
So, negative dog from Houston, which is probably why Maria Sanchez wanted out, because she's an actual good
reinforcements.
Player.
Reinforcements are coming, but
still not great. I'm not loving their outlook of being able to dunk on you at the end of the season. I'm liking your chances of being able to dunk on the Houston Dash admin. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I don't punch down though. So.
Ooh.
That's messy.
I mean, I know that it's very early in the NWSL season, but I was looking at the table earlier today, and this isn't a shot at your Gotham FC, but Gotham and Seattle are both like near the bottom of the table, and those are the two teams that were in the finals last year, which is why this league rocks at the end of the day.
Yeah,
it's early. I totally do think that Gotham will recover. I'm not confident about Seattle, but this league is so fun in just like the parody of it, of just like, yeah, these two teams were in the finals last year. Now they're not doing well to start the season. It's great.
And we expanded it to 8 playoff spots. Now I'm looking at the table and I'm like, it's going to be hard still, like really hard to make the playoffs.
More than half the league makes it, Emily. Come on now.
I know, but it's going to be hard.
She was writing Gotham's name on the trophy before the ball was kicked this season. And now it's like, oh, but there's only 8 teams that make the playoffs, guys.
You know me. I was not being, you know, cocky. I was just saying, like, with what we did, we should do this. But obviously no one saw Kansas City play yet. I didn't really know Chewinga was – I wasn't familiar with her game. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
I've been humbled.
I get it. Let's move on to MLS now. First game we're covering this week. Oh, wait, before we cover this game, because I made a note of it in this game, MLS started rolling out the new, like, ref rules this week. And we're implemented for the first time. The most obvious one being the refs announcing the calls made for VAR. We saw that during the Women's World Cup. I thought it was really great there. In the highlight packages I was watching from this week's MLS games, and I saw it, I loved it. I thought it was great. MLS now can't skip showing me what a penalty is in their highlight packages, which is awesome. And I also think that it's like a little bit more descriptive. I feel like a ref going in like 31 in blue had a handball inside the box and is like, great, thank you. This is lovely. It's a little bit more descriptive. And I like it a lot.
They should bring out the NFL hand signals. I really think like holding, like, yeah, false start, that'd be great.
We kind of have that. I mean, it's like a very rudimentary version of like pointing at the spot is a penalty and like up here is offsides, but like it's not as true miming it out as holding offense. first game of the week is Vancouver 2, Seattle 0. Seattle continues their horrid start to the season, and a ref announcing something over the loudspeaker is what started the implosion from them. Mateus, what happened in this game?
Yeah, I mean, well, the red card, right, goes to Jackson Reagan. He pushed, I want to say it was Schoepf on the back. I thought it was actually kind of a weak red card. I don't know about you, Mitch, but I didn't think it actually merited the VAR overturn from a yellow to a red. Despite like the passage of play, and I just kind of shoved him in the back on when the ball like kind of flew past him. But Jackson Reagan gets sent off. Xavier Arriaga comes on for his last appearance as a Seattle Sounder. He just got traded to the New England Refs today. But this game was already kind of like tepid, I would say, to put it like mildly. There wasn't a whole lot of chances going on. I think the Sounders just this season, they aren't, you know, like last week we talked about rosters, right? Rosters that we thought could do better, or teams that typically do better, LAFC being one of them, not filling out their roster really well. Sounders in that kind of position right now with Rui Diaz is aging pretty badly. Ruznak and Jean Paulo were hurt to start the season. I think this midfield just doesn't have the goods, right? And so they want to play in possession, but they really aren't able to create anything going forward, like around the box. I think Ruznak and Morris don't really have the connection anymore. Leo Xu didn't play in this game until late, I don't think, or he didn't get on at all. In any case, Seattle goes down a man, and then they get caught playing out of the back twice. Yep. Once was Yamar playing out the back, feeds it to God knows who, gets scored on. Another red card comes late in the game with Alex Roldan at the very end, a really ugly tackle. But Seattle finishes the game with 9 men. Vancouver gets 2 goals, but like picking off balls in the box, and Seven Fry has no chance. It's a really ugly sight for Seattle. I don't think I've ever seen Seattle down this bad. Like, they don't always have the most talented rosters, but Brian Schmetzer gets them coached up and playing well. And I think their coaching job is okay, but I think this roster is really, really rough in the front six. And it's not really going to get any better. I'm assuming that Arriaga move earlier today, they didn't get a lot in return for it. They got like 75K in game, so it's to clear cap space. And I know Pedro de la Vega's hurt, but I don't even think it's the roster really makes the playoffs if we're not, for being real about it. It's yikes for me.
Let's be real. Wow.
This is a team that we were talking about potentially being MLS Cup representative from the West at the beginning of the season. Pedro de la Vega, I feel like, is a big miss for them because the very small parts at the beginning of the season that we saw him play, I thought he was very bright. And after he went down, their roster has looked very depleted and like not very exciting. Jordan Morris doesn't exactly like excite me as like a player that's going to like lead a team to win the Western Conference. Do you think that they can build out of this, like get Pedro de la Vega back, get healthy a little bit, and like start playing the way that like we expected the Sounders to be? Or do we think this just might be a bad year for the Sounders?
I think this is just a down year. I think, honestly, like them selling Javier Arriaga, who's been a longtime center back for them. He's the third center back this season. But I think like the indication that they're clearing cap space this year and acquiring someone in the summer, I think might be to like, all right, get them settled in and like go for it next season. Because really, there's not a shot that they're winning MLS Cup with this roster. Mm-hmm. I don't think, like, I don't think any part of this roster other than Yamar at center back, really, that's it. It's like really like top level quality. I think there really needs to be a refresh. Get some of these DP contracts that are like weighing them down off the team. Rui Diaz in particular is giving them, I don't want to say nothing, but close to it. And respect to a club legend, but like that's not going to do it for them. I think they need a whole front six rebuild. And I hope Schmitzer survives it because I think his coaching job isn't bad. I think they're tactically sound. They're playing together. I think they're playing professionally. Like it's not a team that looks like that's dropping their heads like the Houston Dash for this weekend, but it's not a team that that is ready to win games. Even in the West, that's like pretty weak this year. It's not it. So
yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's move on now.
Funny how both Seattle teams are like in the gutter at the moment. I think that's pretty like that's kind of crazy because like historically both have been really great teams in this domestic league. So.
Yeah, no one's having fun going to Lumen Field right now to watch soccer. let's move on now to Red Bulls 2, LAFC 2. Emily, what do you think from your Bulls?
I mean, I guess a good point on the road, but it was frustrating as someone who's now decided to invest emotionally into this team now that they're playing well, to not, like, win. Because they definitely, like, they could have seen out that game. That was, like, a goal at the death by Bwanga. Just total heartbreaker. I will say it started out kind of scary. Aaron Long, he went in for what was a goal saving tackle, and his momentum took him like directly into the goalpost, and he made contact with his shin. Like with the agony he was in, I thought he like broke his leg. They said he should be fine, but that was scary. So he might be out for a little bit, like just with, I imagine there's some bruising at least. So that's going to be a big loss for LA, who, I mean, all these goals were from set pieces. So it's like, I think number one takeaway here is learn how to defend set pieces, everybody. Like that's a theme. I mean, that's a theme like across the board, I think, in other games we'll talk about. But yeah, defend set pieces, people.
Yeah, I think that's just like general American soccer is just set pieces. Like there's a lot of set piece goals in MLS and NWSL that like, you know, when you are watching highlights and watching games from across both these leagues, it's like, man, people love some corners and we're not great at defending them.
Well, people love like, yeah, blowing assignments too is the funny part, but whatever. Not my
best. I was listening to Sam Eunice and Lynn Williams talk about this on their podcast. But they don't like how people have been saying, like, oh, so-and-so was, like, unmarked because of the there's been an evolution, they said, in the tactics and the zonal marking. They're like, it just means someone went into a different zone. And I'm like, I think that's still the same thing.
unmarked. Like, just because right. You're using a zonal marking system doesn't mean someone free at the back post isn't unmarked. Right. That is...
Also, I'm sorry, but like zonal marking, like especially the kind where like you've got like three or four people lined up at the six yard box, that shit never works. I mean, it like works like maybe to put some people off, but like you need to put people on the center backs. Like it's crazy to me when like a center back rises up 2 full feet above any other player and gets dunked on. They're like, oh no, they were marked or whatever. Like that was like your scheme, that was your big idea, and now the center back is like.
It's put your big guys on the big guys. That seems like a very easy tactic for me. Like, if you want a zonal mark, do that all you want. But like, put your center backs on their center backs. Match up the big fellas. I feel like that's a good tactic. I feel like that's just a general good tactic.
I feel like that's Ted Lasso level understanding of like.
Yeah, I sound very American saying that, but right? I also feel like sometimes it's the scary. Obvious thing seems like a good tactic, right? I don't know. I'm not a Southeast coach. Still me. I don't know.
I think Mitch, you should get your resume ready, apply to a few jobs. They need you.
The Colorado Rapids are going to hire me. speaking of the Colorado Rapids, great segue. Planned it. We won 2-1 at home against the Dallas FC. FC Dallas. The fuck? We're now fourth in the Western Conference. Mateus was talking shit earlier. And where did everyone else go? What?
It's a good question because we're still here.
Oh, Dean okay, puts you on the monologue stage.
My screen is just me. Dean did this so I can just like talk around the Rapids and just like be on a solo stage. All right, cool. Here we go. It's the PID section. I'm doing this solo. Kevin Cabral, you are still a fucking bum. Holy shit. We paying you DP money. Oh my God. Mateus, a couple weeks ago, you made a joke about a guy on our team named Calvin Harris. He was the man of the match. He was fucking fantastic. He was so, so good. Created like four great chances for himself and then scored the winner, or what ended up being the winner, because we went up 2-0 and then parked the goddamn bus. It brought in every defensive midfielder we had. We brought in Lawless Abubakar. He got minutes. It was great. Peter Musa scored a nice goal for Dallas to get like a consolation goal like late in the game. But it was a pretty comfortable win for us. We're kind of just a good team now, which is cool. It's very fun watching the Rapids as like just a good soccer team. Like, this team has some serious fight in them. I will die going to war for Chris Armas. I think he's awesome. I give Chris Armas a 20-year contract. This is wild that I'm saying this. But that's
literally been 10 games.
What?
I said it's literally been 10 games.
Yeah, I don't care. But put his jersey in the rafters. Ring of fame. Chris Armas. we're winning it all. I'm going to win so much money from the bet I put to win MLS Cup. Let's move on now to what is the best rivalry in MLS, I think. Despite this team only being around for a year, this is the best rivalry in MLS. SKC 3, St. Louis 3. Also, shout out to Mateus and I's friend, Kalen, who is at the game and has just become a meme for St. Louis fans. He got put on TV, and now they're just posting his face everywhere. So shout out to our good friend. That's happening to him.
That's my nightmare.
I missed that.
Mateus, talk about this fucking awesome game that was the barbecue.
The barbecue. That's that we're going. Yeah. That rocks. That fucking rocks. No, this was a really, really, really sick game. I think a lot of energy. Like the first half, especially, played with a ton of energy. St. Louis are pressing like crazy. First goal, like Kansas City coming back to front in like 2 seconds with a really crazy move from Alan Pulido playing with Willy Agata, and then João Klaus scores a goal himself. Then
grown ass man goal. Grown ass man goal.
I can't believe 12 was on the call for this game, and he was calling like, "Oh no, it was a foul!" Oh, even after halftime, because this goal, the second goal where he shoves a guy out of the way in the 48th minute, I guess, dribbles halfway across the field, drops it to Celi Pompeo, who cuts in. He makes the overlapping run, and like, I don't really think you have to worry about João Klaus on the wing. My man is like 6'3" and slow as dick. I don't know why the hell you're like, oh, let me go after him. He's gonna like be a left winger. No, he's not. But makes the overlapping run. Celi Pompeo from just on the right corner of the box fires a bullet past Tim Melia. And then we get two more goals coming back. Another one back to front from Eric Tomey to put St. Louis up 3-2 after a Berkey own goal. What?
SKC up 3-2.
SKC up 3-2. Fuck. Eric Tomey blasts one past Roman Berkey. And then late in the game, just like dying seconds, last attack of the game, a ball like dribbles out wide. I mean, it was a move. I think AZ Jackson meant to pass it out wide, but it kind of like pinged around a little bit to me. Hits Thomas Toland out in stride in the field. He chips it up over labeled and is like clean through on goal and puts on a crazy finish to the far post for Tim Melia. 3-3, draws it away. St. Louis fans in the stadium go crazy in the little corner over there. Pretty quiet otherwise in the stadium in the Blue Hell. But this was like a really, really intense, a bit of a crazy game. SKC drops more points late. I think this makes, I want to say 12 points dropped from winning positions in the second half for SKC. Like, that's pretty fucking depressing. Because they played well. Both these teams played really, really well. This is a really intense game of soccer. I have to give my credit out to St. Louis, too, for, like, reading the scouting report. They came out pressed all the way in the first half. And the second half, they, like, fell back because they knew SKC needed to chase them. And they just, like, fell all the way back, conserved their energy, and pressed again late in the game. Probably didn't mean to concede two goals. Probably don't want to do that. But they know the moments where they scouted the opposition, know the moments where they do well, are being shitty, and have the deep enough roster to go out and put players on that are able to push the game forward. Kojima had a pretty good game when he came on. AC Jackson was pretty good when he came on. Sensational game in the barbecue. Is that where we're going with?
Yeah,
is that what they call themselves?
Because that rocks. I don't know if anyone else calls it that, but I'm referring to it as that.
I'm pretty sure I saw it as the barbecue. As someone who went to college in St. Louis, I don't think the barbecue is all that, but
I've gone to a barbecue place in St. Louis and it was fine, and I've gone to multiple places in Kansas City and it was fucking great. So that's my take on it.
I do have another note. This game was sold out and the Currents game was sold out. It was happening at the same time. I think that's really cool that so many people decided to go watch soccer today.
I've talked a lot of shit about Kansas City being chosen over Denver for both like Copa and World Cup games, but like, yeah, you're not going to see those kinds of stadiums filling up for like two teams playing at once in Denver the way you will in Kansas City. I will 100% give them that. We think the Arrowhead's shitty and you shouldn't be hosting World Cup games there.
Like, I think Kansas City really is one of the few places in the country where you get, I mean, like, I know Pat Mahomes isn't from there, but like, he's like, good shit, dog. Like, go out, Messi. Go out and win this game, dog, for yourself. Like, there's not a lot of characters like that in this country. And I think credit to them. Credit to them for fostering an environment where you get a little good shit dog from a football player.
We don't need to talk about Patrick Mahomes on here. Stop doing that. Anyway, this game did rock. João Klaus is a fucking grown man, and the goals that he, like, was a part of were very fun, and it's good to see him back because last season he started the year off really hot and was like really, really good, and then he got hurt for like months and we just didn't see much of him, and he's just like one of those strikers that's very fun to watch play, and it's great to watch him play again. And then last thing about this game, if I'm a Kansas City fan, I fucking hate Peter Vermes with every inch of my soul, because that man's answers to interview questions would piss me off so goddamn much, because they're like, what do you think about all these points from drop positions? It's like, you guys seem really worried about that. I'm not really worried about that. And I would be starting a protest outside the stadium if my coach was saying shit like that.
Listen,
crazy.
He is, I believe they said in the broadcast, the seventh longest tenured coach in the world in pro soccer. He's just trying to keep it for one more day.
That's crazy. All right. Well, let's move on to a game that looks just as fun as what this was, but I don't think fully was. Galaxy beat the Quakes 4-3, but they were up 3-1, or they were up 4-1 after the 56th. But Emily, what did you think about this game? There's still seven goals. You got to enjoy a seven-goal game.
You do. And it was, like, tight at the end. But that's basically, the red card that the Galaxy got is what set off, like, San Jose, like, really actually being able to put pressure on the Galaxy. But up until that, like, when it was 3-1, they're like, there's no way San Jose is going to get back in this. Even when it was 4-2, I was like, nah, 4-3, that was exciting. But, yeah, I think Galaxy, like, they really only were vulnerable when they were, like, defending a set piece. Or right after they scored. Like, it was just kind of, like, mental lapses that I think got them in the end. San Jose, like, they're pretty bad, right? But I think they showed some fight, which is good. Like, do you think that can be a platform, at least? Or do you think they're just a bad team?
I so, like San Jose is a roster that it just needs stuff, right? Like Jackson Ewell isn't enough. Lucien Gonzalez is a coach that I think will get something out of everybody, but isn't going to like elevate a team, you know, to the top. I mean, they need more juice, right? They need more juice all the way around. The bottom of the West in a really weak West is not a good sign. I think they're better than that. But yeah, Gruezo, like I'm trying to look at their midfield and their roster here. There's not a lot of creativity, just like straight up. There's not a lot of creativity. There's a lot of eights. There's not a lot of like 10 creativeness, happiness. They signed them all Pellegrino over the winter break. He hasn't played enough probably yet to like settle in. But I think it's a roster that is weak all the way around, and needs a lot of creativity. I think not like attacking like energy and like pace and power. I think they have enough of that, but I think they need like a connective piece between like the midfield and the forward lines, and that is kind of falling to like what Nico Tsakiris now, but that's not great. Not this season. It's not going to happen for them. I'll say that. If they keep on with Luigi Gonzalez next season, I think he could be a better coach and the team could be a better position with some reinforcement, but no, not it.
Inversely, from the Earthquakes, the Galaxy are very fun. They are almost must-see viewing at this point because they score a lot of goals, but they also concede a lot of goals. And that attack is very, very fun. It continues to be every single week. I do want to mention that Ricky Pooj has signed a new contract, which is very exciting. I think that one thing that as MLS continues to grow, it wants to be like exporting young players to Europe and like developing young players and stuff like that. But also to bring a player like Ricky Pooj, like he's 24 still, bring him from Barcelona, have him playing really well, and then not only bring him here and like then he just goes back to Europe, have him sign a second contract and like want to stay in MLS and want to keep playing in MLS is a really good thing for the league. We can't only be exporting talent. To be able to retain a player like him is a, I think, a great step for the league. And it's good for him that all of a sudden he's on a good team now because the Galaxy are looking like the best team in the West right now. They're currently top of the West, and I can't think of another team that's probably close to them, and just in terms of scoring prowess or anything like that.
Yeah, I think they're best in the West. I think Jovalich picked it up. I think Paintsil signing the season, maybe the best winger in the West already.
Yeah,
like this is a they rock. They rock. Before we move on to, I wanted to say
they rock.
Come on, Emily, don't let me create space in my brain before I come to my next thought. I watched the LA Galaxy play San Jose in San Jose on March 2nd, for this show.
Brag.
And the crowd was fucking, and the San Jose crowd was very muted, very quiet, like celebrated an LA Galaxy goal. Like it was kind of lame. Like this is a Cali Classico, put some respect on and like cuss out the other team, right? I said this during the podcast. I will give it to the Galaxy crowd on this end today. Very loud until they got scored on a few times, but very loud and very into this rivalry still. It's not just LAFC. Like this rivalry means something too. So credit to them, and further shame on the San Jose crowd, honestly. Oh,
yeah. I think this is the 100th edition of the Cali Classico.
So. That's right. Heritage.
History.
Some serious heritage behind the Cali Classico. Everyone's favorite MLS rivalry. Let's move on now to Columbus 2, Portland 2, a game that I was there live, and it was very cool. In now my official rankings of MLS environments that I've like witnessed live, Columbus is a firm second place, well behind St. Louis. I don't know fucking if that's ever going to be topped. That was like almost a dream sequence of like an experience at a game. I can't fully comprehend that. But it was awesome being at that game. It was 2-2. It was a very fun game. It was Cucho Hernandez's birthday. He had a great game. Last kick of the game was a free kick. Cucho hit the inside of the bar on this free kick, and it rolled across the line and didn't go in. And I Oh my God. The stadium would have blown its fucking roof off if that went in. Last kick of the game, Cucho Hernandez on his birthday on a free kick scores it to win. Would have been absolutely electric. But it was such a fun game. Evander for Portland was super fun to watch live. He is always involved in everything that Portland's doing. And he was really, really good. Marrera on Columbus's second goal. I think that's maybe the nicest goal I've ever seen live, because he hits the ball maybe the most perfect an upper 90 shot can be. Like, just like hits both parts of the bar and it goes in. Like, it just the most perfect shot you've ever seen in your life. It was gorgeous. It was awesome. It was so much fun. And I want to also say that Ted Uncle is so fucking bald. Holy shit, this guy sucks at reffing. Oh my God. Because he reffed the Colorado-Miami game a couple weeks ago and was fucking horrible. And I forgot his name when we were talking on the podcast, so I didn't call him out specifically. I wrote his name down when I was at the game, so I remember to call him out specifically on this podcast, because he's so fucking bald. It's crazy. So bald. I think the pen, there's so many calls that I think were just terrible and weird, and he's just like got a weird power thing going at all times. Bad ref. Don't like him. Did a very bad job. But shout out Columbus. It was very fun to be at your game. Your stadium is beautiful. It was really, really cool. Let's move on now to the last game that we're covering this week, which is Orlando 2, Montreal 2. What'd you think, Mateus?
This is an interesting game. I was kind of expecting it, now watching this one after the fact, that it would be pretty interesting. There'd be lots of attacking. This one's kind of a rock fight. It ended 2-2. A goal from Mason Toy, pretty early, chipped over Pedro Gallese, and then a penalty to Facu Torres has a 1-1 at the break. Not a whole lot going on. What I've noticed was a lot of really awful hold-up play. Mason Toy is only starting because Joseph Martinez is out, Mateus Kokerode is out. So he's their third-choice striker for Montreal. Was a pretty highly regarded prospect at one point. But I think towards ACL once or twice, and you know, in any case, he's a big lad and who is not using his body very well. Luis Muriel, not a signing that has gone really well for Orlando so far, was not doing super great, and got subbed out for Duncan McGuire in the 60th minute when the game kind of turns around a little bit more. Late in the game, Ariel Lassiter puts one in to make it 2-1 to Montreal off Pedro Gaez's hands from a long shot. I think it was from Bryce Duke. So kind of like a stunner one for Stetsaputo, Crowder rubs, whatever. You think the game's over, 80th minute, you know, you're not expecting too much more. And then Jonathan Suar lets a ball roll right across the face of goal, and Evan Angulo puts one in at 92nd minute. It's a tough one for Montreal to take. I think they did probably more than Orlando did over the course of the game. I think they had a phase in the second half where they're putting the Orlando center backs under a lot of pressure. I think the Orlando center backs, Bricallo and Johnson, stood up well with that pressure overall, and the back line overall did pretty well. But they had, I would say they didn't feel threatened for most of that second half. And so to give one up that late off of what I thought was a really silly ball, I think it should be better defended. Granted, like, the corridor of uncertainty is not somewhere where you want to stick your heel in. But Montreal plays a 3 center back lineup. Someone put a foot in, right? You can't let that roll all the way across the face of goal, have your goalie also let it go all the way across the face of goal, only to get put in the back post by a free runner. That's not a great look. I don't like that for Laurent Courtois and his team. But two teams that need points, right? They're both outside the playoffs right now. I think Montreal should have done better for this one. And I think they'll have the better outlook going forward because Orlando's roster has kind of been iffy start of the season. I know we're expecting a lot of things from them, but the offseason with Duncan McGuire kind of threw a wrench into things. But
I wanted to ask you the same question I asked about Seattle, which is Orlando's another team that a lot of people consider to be one of the best in the East prior to the season, and they've had a very, very slow start. Do you think that their roster can recover, or do you think they just might be just okay? There's probably a lot of question marks still. Like, Duncan McGuire is probably still going to leave in the summer. And if he does, then it's all on the shoulders of Luis Muriel. And You mentioned this earlier. He has not been great to start his MLS career. But what do you think about Orlando? Do you think they're a playoff team? Something better? Something worse?
Well, here's the deal. Like, they're starting Muriel, and he hasn't been playing well. But they're starting him because he's a DP, I believe.
Yes.
And then Duncan McGuire, is he really going to move if he's not playing at least 60 minutes a game?
Duncan McGuire's been playing better than him, even if Muriel 100%. Started.
When he came on this game is when, Orlando started feeling less pressure and getting higher quality shots on target and more powerful shots on target. Like, Muriel doesn't do any of the holdup play, and he's not fast anymore like he used to be. I think that also Nico Lodero would have – I think we had higher expectations for him. Coming from Seattle, a guy with lots of veteran presence, aging and whatever, but like was better. It was an upgrade to be like a more creative player and let Facu Torres play in his more natural role. That isn't really happening. Lodero's fine carrying water, but isn't that guy like that. To tell you the truth, like, I do think some of this is that Orlando got hot to end the season last year. Like, they just got hot. Like, not that they're a terrible roster, but like they overperformed towards the end of last season and sustained it through the playoffs, but like they might just not be who we thought they were. Can they turn it around? I think that's definitely possible with a big, big window in the summer. And they could definitely get in the playoffs, like, not to write them off or anything like that, but this isn't going to be like the swashbuckling, three seed that we saw at the end of last season. That's kind of not going to happen.
For sure. All right. Well, that's all for us this week. I thought this was a great little episode covering a bunch of games from NWSL and MLS. Thanks for joining me, guys, and you guys know what to say.
Rate and subscribe. Bye.
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go, got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar, my plantation sugar, my plantation sugar. Ah, plantain, plantain, plantain.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.